Chapter 10. Thea. With a dozen or so others, we left the glade on foot, and half a league away, found a table set among the trees. I was placed at Vodalus's left hand, and while the others ate, I feigned to and feasted my eyes on him and his lady, whom I had so often recalled as I lay on my cot among the apprentices in our tower. When I had saved him, mentally at least, I had still been a boy, and to a boy all grown men appear lofty, unless they are of very low stature indeed. I saw now that Vodalus was as tall as Thecla, or taller, and that Thecla's half-sister Thea was as tall as she. Then I knew them to be truly of the exalted blood, and not armigers merely, such as Sir Racho had been. It was with Thea that I had first fallen in love, worshipping her because she belonged to the man I had saved. Thecla I had loved in the beginning because she recalled Thea. Now, as autumn dies and winter and spring and summer comes again, the end of the year as it is its beginning, I loved Thea once more because she recalled Thecla. Vodalus said, "You are an admirer of women." And I lowered my eyes. "I have been little in polite company, sir. Please forgive me. I share your admiration. So there is nothing to forgive. But you are not, I hope, studying that slender throat with the thought of parting it."
"Never, sir."
"I am delighted to hear it." He picked up a platter of thrushes, selected one, and put it upon my plate. It was a sign of special favor. "Still, I own I am a trifle surprised. I would have thought that a man in your profession would look on us poor human beings much as a butcher does on cattle."
"Of that I cannot inform you, sir. I have not been bred a butcher."
Vodalus laughed.
"A touch! I am almost sorry now that you have consented to serve me. If you had only elected to remain my prisoner, we would have had many delightful conversations while I used you, as I had intended to cheat for the unfortunate Barnock's life. As it is, you will be away by morning. Yet I think I have an errand for you that will consort well with your own inclinations."
"If it is your errand, sir, it must."
"You are wasted on the scaffold."
He smiled.
"We will find better work for you before long. But if you are to serve me well, you must understand something of the position of the pieces on the board and the goal of the game we play. Call the sides white and black, and in honor of your garments, so that you shall know where your interests lie, we shall be black. No doubt you have been told that we blacks are mere bandits and traitors. But have you any notion of what it is we strive to do?"
"To checkmate the autarch, sir."
"That would be well enough, but it is only a step and not our final goal. You have come from the citadel. I know you see something of your journeyings and history, that great fortress of bygone days, so you must possess some feeling for the past. Has it never struck you that mankind was richer by far, and happier too, a Kiliad gone than it is now?"
"Everyone knows," I said, "that we have fallen far from the brave days of the past."
"As it was then, so shall it be again. Men of Earth, sailing between the stars, leaping from galaxy to galaxy, the masters of the daughters of the sun."
The chatelaine Thea, who must have been listening to Vodalus, though she had showed no sign of it, looked across him to me and said in a sweet cooing voice,
"Do you know how our world was renamed, torturer? The Dawn Men went to Red Verthandi, who was then named War, and because they thought that had an ungracious sound that would keep others from following them, they renamed it, calling it present. That was a jest in their tongue, for the same word meant now and the gift. Or so one of our tutors once explained the matter to my sister and me, though I do not see how any language could endure such confusion.
Vodalus listened to her as though he were impatient to speak himself, yet was too well-mannered to interrupt her.
Then others, who would have drawn a people to the innermost habitable world for their own reasons, took up the game as well, and called that world Skald, the world of the future. Thus our own became Earth, the world of the past.
You are wrong in that, I fear, Vodalus told her. I have it on good authority that this world of ours has been called by that name from the utmost reaches of antiquity. Still, your error is so charming that I would rather have it that you are correct and I mistaken.
Thea smiled at that, and Vodalus turned again toward me.
Though it does not explain why Earth is called as she is, my dear Chatelaine's tale makes the vital point well, which is that in those times mankind traveled by his own ships from world to world and mastered each and built on them the cities of man. Those were the great days of our race, when our fathers' fathers' fathers strove for the mastery of the universe.
He paused, and because he seemed to expect some comment from me, I said, Sire, we are much diminished in wisdom from that age.
Ah, now you strike to the heart. Yet with all your perspicacity, you mistake it. No, we are not diminished in wisdom. We are diminished in power. Study has advanced without let up. But even as men have learned all that is needful for mastery, the strength of the world has been exhausted. We exist now, and precariously, upon the ruin of those who preceded us. While some skim the air in their flyers, 10,000 leagues in a day, we others creep upon the skin of earth, unable to go from one horizon to the next, before the westernmost has lifted itself to veil the sun. You spoke a moment ago of checkmating that mewling fool, the Autarch. I want you to conceive now of two Autarchs, two great powers striving for mastery. The white seeks to maintain things as they are. The black to set man's foot on the road to domination again. I called it the black by chance. But it would be well to remember that it is by night that we see the stars strongly. They are remote and all but invisible in the red light of day. Now, of those two powers, which would you serve? The wind was stirring in the trees, and it seemed to me that everyone at the table had fallen silent, listening to Vodalus and waiting for my reply. I said, The black, surely. Good. But as a man of sense, you must understand that the way to reconquest cannot be easy. Those who wish no change may sit hugging their scruples forever. We must do everything. We must dare everything.
The others had begun to talk and eat again. I lowered my voice until only Vodalus could hear me. Sir, there is something I have not told you. I dare not conceal it longer, for fear you should think me faithless.
He was a better intriguer than I, and turned away before he answered, pretending to eat.
What is it? Out with it. Sire, I said, I have a relic.
The thing they say is the claw of the conciliator. He was biting the roasted thigh of a fowl as I spoke. I saw him pause. His eyes turned to look at me, though he did not move his head. Do you wish to see it, sir? It is very beautiful. And I have it in the top of my boot. No, he whispered. Yes, perhaps, but not here. No. Better not at all. To whom should I give it, then? Vodalist chewed and swallowed. I had heard from friends I have in Nessus that it was gone. So you have it. You must keep it until you can dispose of it. Do not try to sell it. It would be identified at once. Hide it somewhere. If you must, throw it into a pit. But surely, sir, it is very valuable. It is beyond value, which means it is worthless. You and I are men of sense. Despite his words, there was a tinge of fear in his voice. But the rabble believe it to be sacred, a performer of all manner of wonders. If I were to possess it, they would think me a desecrator and an enemy of the Theologumenon. Our masters would think me turned traitor. You must tell me. Just at that moment, a man I had not seen previously came running up to the table with a look that indicated he bore urgent news. Vodalus rose and walked a few paces away with him, looking very much, I thought, like a handsome schoolmaster with a boy, for the messenger's head was no higher than his shoulder. I ate, thinking he would soon return, but after a long questioning of the messenger, he walked away with him, disappearing among the broad trunks of the trees. One by one the others rose too, until no one remained but the beautiful Thea, Jonas and me, and one other man.
You are to join us, Thea said at last in her cooing voice. Yet you do not know our ways. Have you need of money?
I hesitated, but Jonas said, That's something that's always welcome, Chatelaine, like the misfortunes of an older brother.
Shares will be set aside for you from this day of all we take.
When you return to us, they will be given to you.
Meanwhile, I have a purse for each of you to speed you on your way.
We're going then? I asked.
Were you not told so? Vodalus will instruct you at the supper.
I had supposed the meal we were eating would be the final one of the day, and the thought must have been reflected in my face.
There will be a supper tonight, when the moon is bright, Thea said. Someone will be sent to fetch you.
Then she quoted a scrap of verse.
Dine at dawn to open your eyes. Dine at noon that you be strong. Dine at eve and then talk long. Dine by night if you'd be wise. But now my servant Chunyald will take you to a place where you can rest for your journey.
The man, who had been silent until now, stood and said, Come with me. I told Thea,
I would speak with you, Chatelaine, when we have more leisure. I know something that concerns your schoolmate.
She saw that I was serious in what I said, and I saw that she had seen. Then we followed Chunyald through the trees for a distance, I suppose of a league or more, and at length reached a grassy bank beside a stream. Wait here, he said. Sleep if you can. No one will come until after dark. I asked, What if we were to leave? There are those all through the wood who know our liege's will concerning you. He said, and turning on his heel, walked away. Then I told Jonas what I had seen beside the opened grave, just as I have written in here. I see, he remarked when I was finished. Why you will join this Vodalus. But you must realize that I am your friend, not his. What I desire is to find the woman you call Jolenta. You want to serve Vodalus and to go to Thrax and begin a new life in exile, and to wipe out the stain you say you have made on the honor of your guild. Though I confess I don't understand how such a thing can be stained, and to find the woman called Dorcas, and to make peace with the woman called Agia, while returning something we both know of to the women called Pellerines. He was smiling by the time he finished this list, and I was laughing. And though you remind me of the old man's kestrel, that sat on a perch for 20 years and then flew off in all directions, I hope you achieve these things. But I trust you realize that it is possible, just barely possible perhaps, but possible, that one or two of them may get in the way of 4 or 5 of the others. What you're saying is very true, I admitted. I'm striving to do all those things, and although you won't credit it, I am giving all my strength and as much of my attention as can be of any benefit to all of them. Yet I have to admit things aren't going as well as they might. My divided ambitions have landed me in no better place than the shade of this tree, where I am a homeless wanderer. While you, with your single-minded pursuit of one all-powerful objective, look where you are. In such talk, we passed the watches of late afternoon. Birds twittered overhead, and it was very pleasant to have such a friend as Jonas, loyal, reasonable, tactful, and filled with wisdom, humor, and prudence. At that time, I had no hint of his history, but I sensed that he was being less than candid about his background, and I sought, without venturing direct questions, to draw him out. I learned, or rather I thought I did, that his father had been a craftsman, that he had been raised by both parents in what he called the usual way, though it is in fact rather rare, and that his home had been a seacoast town in the south, but that when he had last visited it, he had found it so much changed that he had no desire to remain. From his appearance, when I had first encountered him beside the wall, I had supposed him to be about 10 years my elder. From what he said now, and to a lesser extent from some earlier talks we had had, I decided he must be somewhat older. He seemed to have read a good deal of the chronicles of the past, and I was still too naive and unlettered myself, despite the attention Master Palaemon and Thecla had given my mind, to think that anyone much below middle age could have done so. He had a slightly cynical detachment from mankind that suggested he had seen a great deal of the world. We were still talking when I glimpsed the graceful figure of the Chatelaine Thea moving among the trees some distance away. I nudged Jonas, and we fell silent to watch her. She was coming toward us without having seen us, so that she moved in the blind way people do who are merely following directions. At times a shaft of sunlight fell upon her face, which, if it chanced to be in profile, suggested Thecla's so strongly that the sight of it seemed to tear at my chest. She had Thecla's walk as well, the proud Fororica's stalk that should never have been caged. It must be a truly ancient family, I whispered to Jonas. Look at her, like a dryad. It might be a willow walking. Those ancient families are the newest of all, he answered. In ancient times, there was nothing like them. I do not believe she was near enough to make out our words, but she seemed to hear his voice and looked toward us. We waved and she quickened her pace, not running yet coming very rapidly because of the length of her stride. We stood,
then sat again, when she had reached us, and seated herself upon her scarf with her face toward the brook.
You said you had something to tell me about my sister.
Her voice made her seem less formidable, and seated, she was hardly taller than we.
I was her last friend, I said.
She told me they would try to make you persuade Vodalus to give himself up to save her. Did you know she was imprisoned?
Were you her servant?
Thea seemed to weigh me with her eyes.
Yes, I heard they took her to that horrible place in the slums of Nessus, where I understand she died very quickly. I thought of the time I had spent waiting outside Thecla's door, before the scarlet thread of blood came trickling from under it. But I nodded. How was she arrested, do you know?
Thecla had told me the details, and I recounted them just as I had got them from her, omitting nothing.
I see,
Thea said, and was silent for a moment, staring at the moving water.
I have missed the court, of course. Hearing about those people and that business of muffling her with a tapestry. That's so very characteristic. Calls up the reasons I left it.
I think she missed it sometimes, too. I said, at least she talked of it a great deal. But she told me that if she were ever freed, she would not go back. She spoke about the country house, from which she took her title, and told me how she would refurnish it and give dinners there for the leading persons of the region, and hunt. Thea's face twisted in a bitter smile.
I have had enough of hunting now for 10 lifetimes. But when Vodalus is autarch, I will be his consort. Then I shall walk beside the Well of Orchids again. This time with the daughters of 50 exultants in my train to amuse me with their singing. Enough of that. It is some months off at least. For the present I have what I have.
She looked somberly at Jonas and me and rose very gracefully, indicating by a gesture that we were to remain where we were.
I was happy to hear something now of my half-sister. That house you spoke of is mine now, you know, though I can't claim it. To recompense you, I warn you of the supper we will soon share. You didn't seem receptive of the hints Vodalus flung you. Did you understand them?
When Jonas said nothing, I shook my head.
If we and our allies and masters who wait in the countries beneath the tides are to triumph, we must absorb all that can be learned of the past. Do you know of the analeptic Alzabo?
I said, no, Chatelaine. But I have heard tales of the animal of that name. It is said it can speak, and that it comes by night to a house where a child has died, and cries to be let in.
Thea nodded. That animal was brought from the stars long ago, as were many other things for the benefit of Earth. It is a beast having no more intelligence than a dog, and perhaps less, but it is a devourer of carrion and a clawer at graves. And when it has fed upon human flesh, it knows, at least for a time, the speech and ways of human beings. The analeptic Alzabo is prepared from a gland at the base of the animal's skull. Do you understand me?
When she had gone, Jonas would not look at me, nor I at his face. We both knew what feast it was we were to attend that night.